afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with Beans. Monday, as you know, we did a lead up to the State of the Union. State of the Union? What the hell? To the SCOTUS hearing on Murthy v. Missouri. I'll be okay. Murthy v. Missouri. And then I live streamed that with my commentary. And afterwards, I did a space on X where I outlined all of my thoughts with it, like right fresh in my mind. And I was going to try and do that again this morning. But then I went back to that space and I wanted to listen to it again just to refresh myself. And I'm like, you know what? It doesn't make sense for me to reinvent the wheel. This was like my raw opinion and thoughts right after the fact. So I'm going to play that for everybody today so that you can hear my analysis of this hearing. And then we're going to play one clip that went viral. And I'm going to show, I reacted live to it. I mean, you guys were all with me if you were watching live. It was something else. But let's get right into that. It's not a very compelling visual, just warning you. See? If you're watching, it's not a compelling visual at all. But I need you guys to hear my thoughts on all of this stuff. So I start, there's a little bit of a hubbub at the end. I'm just going to go full screen. You'll see little trashes up here because he was speaking for some of it. And we'll get into a little bit of what I said afterwards. So off we go.
I was really biting my tongue so as not to completely, you know, overpower the arguments that were going on. And like part of me is sitting here, I just couldn't believe the apparent notion that is very clear in the questioning. Now, I just want to say this. At SCOTUS, when there's a case in front of SCOTUS, the justices will ask questions that make it seem like they are on one side or the other. But a lot of the times those questions are asked in that way to either firm up what they're thinking, get a different perspective, you know, to hear a different perspective on precedent from an attorney, et cetera, so on and so forth, or a solicitor. And not always does it mean that the judges are ruling one way or the other. Like, it's a very interesting experience to listen to cases argued in front of the SCOTUS for that reason. So taking that on its face, you know, you wouldn't necessarily jump to the conclusion that because of the judges' questions and the way that those questions were asked, it means that they're going to rule one way or the other. That's not true. They could ask questions that seem all highly adversarial of the person who petitioned, but then at the end of the day, rule for that person. And that's just the way it works. However, that being said, the tone today was markedly different than the other times that I've heard this happen. And the reason why I'm worried about that is because none, minus Alito, zero goose egg of these justices seemed favorable to the government having a limit on their activities when it comes to free speech. It seemed as though the justices were all very sympathetic to points in time where the government would need the ability to censor Americans, because there was a national emergency or a national security issue. And one of the first things that I noticed that really infuriated me was that the attorney that argued for the government, one of the first things he said was that this injunction will bar the government from speaking to social media companies when it comes to, you know, URLs that are of foreign origin that pose a national security threat or some other threat to the government. Again, before I continue, if you want to join the conversation here about this topic, please, by all means, raise your hand. I'm one of those equal opportunity people. I want as many people up here as I can have to talk about this. And
That's a lie. I mean, that's just an abject lie. This is something that the government has been doing about this injunction from day one. Judge Doty put certain carve-outs in the temporary injunction that was at issue here today for the government going to social media platforms to remove pedophiles or break up human trafficking rings, things they don't do. As it stands today, he had carve-outs in there for national security. He had carve-outs in there for people who share incorrect information about Election Day. That's another example that the government attorney argued today that would be prohibited if the injunction were to stand. And because my overall vibe from listening to this hearing is that none of these justices, save three or four, actually bothered to read the record in this case or the injunction at issue itself, that they don't have any clue what this case is actually about. And that's my biggest problem, because if you read the injunction, there would have been an immediate question to an attorney. Why are you saying that there's a carve-out, just like the Fifth Circuit did? The same argument was brought before the Fifth Circuit. The Fifth Circuit judges said, well, hold on a second, because there's a carve-out for this. The Fifth Circuit judges were able to pull different portions of the record to ask questions about it. The Fifth Circuit reconsidered their original grant because they had removed CISA and added CISA back in after they reconsidered. It's almost unheard of for the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals to correct themselves and make an addition, not a subtraction. So the fact that this court did not push back against the blatant lies that the government attorney was telling in regards to the very basic injunction itself, never mind the fact pattern, is wildly concerning to me. That was spoken and taken as gospel for all purposes of further argument. And unfortunately, the state's attorney from Louisiana didn't argue it either. He didn't correct the record. He didn't say, let's get this out of the way. Now, he did it in a roundabout way when he was referencing arguments of whether or not the government could talk to social media companies at all. There was just, at its core, a complete misunderstanding of this case that was not corrected in oral argument today by any side. I felt like I was in a black hole with my arms out in front of me, wandering around like, why aren't they talking about this? Another specific point I brought up in my summary of this hearing. And again, I just want to say this, and I'll keep saying it. I'm not an attorney. I'm not. So, I'm not in a place to argue this as an attorney, because I'm a journalist. That being said, I focus almost exclusively on law. For I guess 80 to 90% of my work is on law. So I'm very familiar with how these things usually work. And I forgot the point I was even gonna make, but there was no circling around to get people focused. The example, this was what it was, Tucker Carlson and Tommy Lahren, they kept on saying traceability was a big thing they were talking about. Traceability, meaning the liberal justices seem to want Missouri and Louisiana to prove through a distinct traceability argument that Jill Hines, one of the beautiful plaintiffs on this lawsuit, was censored directly as a result of something they said to the social media company. So, i.e., on June 20th, the government wrote to Facebook and said, remove Jill Hines's post because it talks about vaccine hesitancy, whatever, just a hypothetical. A much better hypothetical, might I add, than what was being thrown around in that courtroom today. And then the Facebook executive said in this hypothetical, no, we're not going to remove this. And then the government said, well, if you don't, then we're going to do X. And then they removed her. That's what they're looking for in asking those questions. And there was another two examples that would have fit the traceability argument they were trying to push people into a hole of arguing in Tommy Lahren and Tucker Carlson. Both of those accounts, both of those people had posts banned directly as a result
of the government. Now, those are two high-profile figures, and towards the end of arguments, the person, I think it was a solicitor of Louisiana, I don't know his name, and I'm not familiar with him, but he did raise Tucker Carlson, but he didn't do it in a way that was clear enough, I think, personally. It was very easy and obvious, and that was not the only example where traceability could be found. There were many other examples in the record of traceability arguments that were much stronger than the argument they were trying to advance for Jill Hynes, which is sadly why I think they were trying to advance it. No, it doesn't work this way, SCOTUS. It doesn't work this way. It doesn't work like this. It doesn't work where the government goes out and directly names a million social media users, but sometimes they start their own help desk at CISA to name a million social media users and put them into different buckets in terms of what topics they're discussing that should no longer be discussed. And then sometimes CISA will send the list of those posts to social media companies under the cudgel of the government and say, if you don't remove these, then this. And that is the crux of this case. And if you were listening to these arguments today for the very first time and knew nothing about this case, you would walk away not having a clue any of the things that were important to walk away from it with. And it's a good thing that the SCOTUS does not solely rely on oral arguments to make a decision. And I'll tell you, one of the only things that is kind of propping me up on this. I have it in my thread that's pinned at the top of my profile. Hey, Trash, I'm going to chat with you in a second. The Supreme Court, when they granted this, hold on. The Supreme Court, when they put the stay and granted cert on this, wrote a four-page dissent. Three justices, Alito, Thomas, and Gorsuch, I believe, wrote a four-page dissent on the stay where they went and they detailed parts of the record where the government was overstepping its bounds. From the oral arguments today, it seemed like they had no effing clue what the hell they were even looking at, nor did it seem like they read the record at all. Now, I know in that four pages, they specifically mentioned that before they issued the stay, nobody else read the case, nobody but them. They didn't even know what the record said. They didn't know what the fact pattern was. They knew nothing. They just issued the stay because they issued the stay. And you saw these leftist judges today doing this. And quite frankly, Amy Coney Barrett, Kavanaugh, all of them. So there's bunches of other examples of things that happened today that were wildly frustrating. But I'll bring my friend Trash in. Let me know what your thoughts are, Trash.
Okay. That was my immediate analysis. I know it sounds very dire. One thing I add later on that we're not going to hear is that the silence from the conservative side outside of like Kavanaugh and a few questions by Amy Coney Barrett didn't bother me. Now, Alito was very vocal, but it doesn't bother me because I know they read this. And if you read it, I know they read it because they said they did. If you read it, there's no question. What happened here? There's nothing to question. There's nothing to ask. It is abundantly clear. So the fact that they didn't have questions doesn't bother me at all. They know. And that's what I have to say about that. Now, there was a clip that everybody latched onto, rightfully so. I actually want to pull up my post on it because I put my reaction to it as it happened above this. It was Ketanji Brown Jackson. This is what everybody's latched on to, basically. It was just basically one of the most ridiculous things that we've heard. Hold on. Bear with me. I'm going to play her, and then I'm going to play... You know what? I'll just play my reaction to her instead. No. Where? Come on. This is ridiculous. They don't let you find things quickly. It'll be under my media.
This concern.
Here we go. Let's listen to Ketanji. And if you were here, you saw this as well. This was absolutely terrible. here.
This concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods. What would you have the government do? I've heard you say a couple times that the government can post its own speech, but in my hypothetical, kids, this is not safe, don't do it, is not going to get it done. And so I guess some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps.
If you're a communist.
To protect the citizens.
If you're a communist,
yes. You seem to be suggesting that that duty cannot manifest itself in the government encouraging or even pressuring platforms to take down harmful information.
I can't believe this.
So can you help me? Because I'm really worried about that.
I'm really worried that the government
the First Amendment operating.
I'm really worried the government might not be able to overstep our First Amendment rights if they need to. Like, what? What? And Dinesh D'Souza and everyone asked me directly about this yesterday. And I mean, I answered them. It's commie. Literally commie. Like, that's us also assuming, like, their hypotheticals were wildly inappropriate. And they were covered under the terms of service. That's the thing. Like, they don't understand shit about this. I'm really concerned that the government might not be able to step in and usurp our First Amendment rights to the Constitution in favor of government and their ministry of truth. I mean, what? Absurd. I do have Alito here. We'll play a quick clip of Alito, and then we're going to move on to Stossel. And after that blast from the past, that absolute, like, you know when you live through something and you're like, ouch, you know, that was a really traumatic period. I'm just going to kind of move on from it and not kind of think about it anymore. But then you see like a video of yourself, or if even if it was something ridiculously happy that you loved, and like years go by and you all of a sudden stumble upon a clip of it and you're like, wow. And you remember how you felt then. John Stossel did an amazing recap of the COVID tyranny that just fits like a puzzle piece right in here. And I know we're a little clip heavy today, and I apologize for that. But I feel like it's necessary. It's this. Let's listen to Alito restore my faith in the bench. At least a little bit.
Article 3. Mr. Fletcher, let me follow up on that. If even one of the plaintiffs has standing, then we're required to get to the merits. So let me ask you about Ms. Hines. And as you just mentioned, she must have faced an imminent threat of future injury at the time when the complaint was filed, and that injury must be traceable to the actions of the government. So in the first part of that, imminent threat of future injury, her Facebook personal account was restricted at the time when the complaint was filed. So why isn't that sufficient to show a threat of an imminent threat of future injury?
We're not disputing that when the private platforms moderated the plaintiff's pages or their posts, that's an injury in some sense. We haven't disputed that they suffered that injury. We've disputed the traceability question and then the redressability question.
Right. So on traceability is basically a question of causation, right?
Agreed.
All right. Both the district court found that the injury was traceable to the government's actions, and the Fifth Circuit accepted that finding. Reviewed it and accepted it. So that's two lower courts. We don't usually reverse findings of fact that have been endorsed by two lower courts. And you haven't attempted to show that it was clear that finding is clearly erroneous.
So respectfully, Justice Alito, I disagree with that. I think that the Fifth Circuit and the district court applied too loose a notion of traceability. They didn't try to say this post or any action against Ms. Hines was traceable to any action by the government. They did what the red brief calls a bird's eye view of traceability. They said the government is talking to the platforms a lot. The platforms are doing moderation. And so we'll just assume that all of that moderation is traceable to the government.
Well, do you think that it's necessary to identify a single government action and then trace it to a single consequence? Do you think that's required?
No, but I think you have to trace some government action to some consequence that befell
yeah.
you. And maybe I could just be specific about this, because we challenged this in our opening brief, and the red brief comes back at pages 19 to 21 and offers up what I take to be their best examples of traceable harm. And I invite you to go look at the pages of the record that they're citing.
Because I can't. His voice just... Can you imagine being on the phone with this dude? And not for nothing, Alito's voice doesn't match him either. Here, I gotta play the rest of it because I have no choice.
As often what you find is that they're citing moderation of their content that happened either before the challenged government actions to which they're referring or long after.
All right, I have looked at that. On the issue of causation, under Malhealthy, are they required to show anything more than the government's action was a motivating factor?
I don't know the answer to that in all cases, and I'm reluctant to make sort of broad statements about what the traceability requirement demands in different circumstances. I will say here, we're not disputing that. We're saying that they haven't shown any causal connection between the...
Has no effect whatsoever.
Right.
And both the lower courts were wrong on that.
I think they were, because, again, they did this blunderbuss approach where they said the government is talking to the platforms about moderation and the platforms are moderating content. But the platforms were moderating this content long before the government was talking to them. They
had
powerful business incentives.
That's not true. But it's just not fucking true. You're a liar. Brian Fletcher, you are supposed to be defending our rights, not treating us as adversaries. You understand that the government is treating us as adversaries. It's just not a good thing. It's really not good. Please. The American people are stupid. Alito was brilliant. He was, the whole time. I love Alito. I clapped. I stood up. I pumped my fist behind the full screen. Thank you so much for at least injecting a small percentage of sanity into this hearing. And I am not an attorney. I've not gone through school. I've said this a million times. I'm a mere plebe, okay? But Hans on Twitter posted that the gentleman who argued this case for Louisiana was a junior attorney. And honestly, that was probably a big mistake, because there were many times where I was like, say this, say that. And I'm like, am I wrong about being able to argue that vociferously? No. So with all of this foreshadowing of tyranny here, or retrospective of tyranny here, I want to play this John Stossel clip. It's a little longer, but it's worth every second, because it sent me back to a time where I was literally chilled by what I saw happening. And it's across the board. Nobody escapes scrutiny here. Literally no one. And God bless all the American people. Let's watch this. This is crazy.
New guidelines for every American to follow over the next 15 days.
Stay at home. That is the order tonight.
Stay home.
We can flatten the curve.
We had 15 days to slow the spread, we were told.
100% of the workforce must stay home.
Now, I was already skeptical of government command and control, but I was still surprised at how authoritarian many politicians were eager to be. Those 15 days turned into years, and the loss of our freedoms increased.
This is not about freedom or personal choice.
It should have been. Instead, everywhere, politicians killed jobs, pass laws that make everything cost more.
Costs are going up everywhere, from the grocery store to the gas station.
They sped up America's path toward bankruptcy.
The largest stimulus bill in U.S. history, $2 trillion.
Politicians and unions closed schools and caused a historic setback for young people.
Scores decreased by the largest amount ever recorded.
And the deep state's rules probably killed people. COVID tests were available for use.
Hundreds of these machines are currently in the United States.
But
they're not allowed to be to test for the virus.
Not for coronavirus
because
yet.
You need FDA approval.
Yep.
4 years later, let's remember politicians' incompetence and their insatiable wish to gain power over us. Let's not give them power like that again. Nor should we trust the hysterical media. They're always eager to make life scarier than it is.
There is a very good chance there's no room for you in the hospital right now if you need to go.
And the worst is yet to come.
What follows is one of my first videos from the beginning of COVID. Sadly, it was just a taste of what was to come.
Some governors are still refusing to take action to protect their own citizens.
The media keep insisting government must set stricter rules.
10 states have no stay-at-home orders.
Even some on Fox say it.
It is necessary to shut things down everywhere. And that includes Utah, Wyoming.
Wait a second. Has he ever been to Wyoming? It's got so much open space. Why would the same rules apply here as in New York? It's creepy how some people are so eager to have authorities boss us around. Police departments now monitor people with drones.
This is the Volusia Sheriff's Office. Please adhere to social distancing guidelines.
Now some people are saying enough. These people are protesting North Carolina's stay-at-home order.
I feel that my rights have been completely removed.
On Twitter, the police declared protesting is a non-essential activity, and they arrested this woman. But wait a second, the Bill of Rights does say the American people have a right to peaceably assemble and petition the government.
All public and private gatherings of any size are prohibited.
Michigan's governor probably imposed the harshest rules.
Residents can no longer visit friends or relatives. Those who have more than one home banned from traveling between them.
No wonder people staged this protest against her rules.
Legit, I don't know if you can see it. I legit have chills. Thinking about it. Oh, here we go, back.
Say it goes too far, takes away their rights, and in some cases is too arbitrary.
Arbitrary is how it looks. Big stores may stay open, but they must not sell certain things.
Big box stores will also have to close areas of the store that are dedicated to things like carpet or flooring, furniture, garden centers, plant nurseries, or paint.
But things like gardening and painting are activities that can be done far from other people. So is exercise. But watch out in California.
A paddleboarder is chased down by law enforcement for being out on the water at Malibu Beach.
This man was more than 6 feet from anyone, but police chased him down.
He cut him off!
And they punished him.
Yep, this paddleboarder was arrested.
In Encinitas, California, police gave $1,000 tickets to people watching the sunset. Yes, they were inside cars, not endangering anyone. That day, the police posted this video saying, "We go to work for you."
We're going to continue to be doing enforcement. We're dealing with the crisis at this point, and we want compliance from everybody because this is lives that we're trying to save.
But it's not clear that demanding total compliance is the best way to save lives.
In the Swedish city of Malmo, life appears to be carrying on almost as normal.
Sweden took a near opposite approach. Yes, they encourage older people to stay inside and tell sick people to stay home. They don't want hospitals overwhelmed. But otherwise, they let life happen.
In this street in Stockholm, there's not much evidence of social distancing.
Sweden's leaders don't think an extended shutdown is sustainable.
Closing schools, more stringent measures like that, closing borders. You cannot do that for months or years ahead. What we're doing in Sweden, we can continue to do for a long time, and I think that's going to proved to be very, very important in the long run.
Because of vaccines, probably more than a year away. Until then, the best protection is what epidemiologists call herd immunity, a critical mass of people who get the disease and then are resistant to it.
herd immunity is the one thing that will eventually slow down the spread of this virus. Nothing else will slow it down in the long term.
The idea is that once enough people have gotten coronavirus, there'll be enough immunity to prevent future mass outbreaks and to protect the most vulnerable people.
That idea was widely mocked by the media and experts from around the world.
Sweden's failed experiment. How their dangerous COVID gamble went wrong.
Officials made the decision not to lock down, hoping it would lead to widespread immunity. But cases are surging.
Excuse me, MSNBC. Now we know Sweden saw the lowest excess death rate in Europe. So I figure I was right then to say what Sweden did
seems smarter than the absolute shutdown promoted by many American authorities.
If we see continued noncompliance, they'll wind up facing misdemeanor charge, and DWP will step in and shut off their water and power.
Shut off their water? Let's be sensible about this. Politicians are supposed to serve us, not just boss us around.
So yeah, when Ketanji Brown Jackson says, "I'm worried that the government won't be able to take care of you," this is what she means. Unbelievable in what is supposed to be a free country. I want everyone to remember what you felt like and what happened so that when it comes up again, all of us are vociferously arguing and protesting our rights granted to us by our Creator. 15 days to slow the spread was never to eradicate this virus. It was to supposedly keep less people from getting sick all at once and stretch it out over a period of time. And all of that led to
this, you know, insert for the vaccine. Paper's there and there's nothing printed on it. I find that very interesting, disheartening, disgusting, and lots of other words. But then it gets better. It just keeps, wait, there's more. It just keeps happening. The CDC redacts every single word of a 148-page study on a myocarditis after COVID vaccination. So I asked research to print the study for me. 148 pages. The entire thing is redacted. What good does a study do if there's nothing there?
Senator Janae Sharp.
What might have been there that they needed to redact it? That's even scarier.
We're witnessing an active cover-up of a colossal consumer product safety debacle that is basically affecting the entire world. Mm-hmm. So in the United States, our CDC, National Institutes of Health, and the FDA are actively involved in a cover-up. And the same is occurring in the UK with the MHRA, Europe with European Medicine Agencies, and Australia with the Therapeutic Goods Administration. Something is going on that's very big. Each one of these companies that puts out a product has an obligation to produce 90 days of safety monitoring after their product comes out. It's a regulatory dossier. If somebody has a problem with the new product and they call the company, like Pfizer, Pfizer has to report, write down what happened, and they have to collate that in a report and produce it and make it publicly available. When it came to 90 days with Pfizer, the first vaccine that came out, remember Pfizer was approved December 10th, 2020. Pfizer didn't produce a report. And then people started asking, well, what's happening with your vaccine? And Pfizer would not disclose what happened. And then it went to court. And the lawyer for the FDA stepped in and said they don't want to release Pfizer's dossier for 55 years. Mm-hmm. Oh. 55 years. And the plaintiff pushed, and finally, slowly, the Pfizer dossier came out. Pfizer recorded 1,223 deaths with their product within 90 days of release. People were calling Pfizer in desperation, watching their family members die after taking the vaccine. Pfizer recorded over 1,200 new adverse events, new problems that Dr. Bowden has talked to you about that we are grappling with the entire time. But the point is, our FDA worked to cover this up. The FDA should be regulating this company. FDA should have been having at least monthly meetings and fully disclosing what was going on with these novel vaccines, which are a genetic transfer technology platform.
Some comments asking me about when the patent came out. Yes, I'm well aware of all of that. DARPA, all of it. We've written about it extensively. It doesn't really matter. The vaccine technology was tested on 8 human beings before they adapted it for this. And if everybody thinks this is new, I bring in the good doctor. The good doctor, Ron Paul, the man who woke me from my slumber completely. I was halfway there. This is like a hero of mine. I don't fangirl over many people, but Dr. Ron Paul, the good doctor, sat down with Tucker Carlson. And Tucker Carlson asked him the day that he thinks we lost the government forever. Now, I would argue it's a little earlier than this, but here.
The date, I say it was concrete that there was a coup and we lost our government, was November 22nd.
Yes.
The assassination of Kennedy.
That was 60 years ago. Yeah. And our lawmakers never talk about it.
But you mentioned to me earlier and brought back in memory, but do you know who they appointed to the commission? Alan Dulles.
He was on the Warren Commission.
Yeah.
So the guy who was responsible for the murder.
He probably was the most.
Was investigating the murder.
That's what dawned on me. The Republic is gone. That's when I said the day it ended. The date, I say it was concrete.
And he said one more thing I wanted to play for you. I got to watch the whole interview because I love Ron Paul. Here.
And I can't steal from our neighbor and we can't take their car and we can't hurt people. Why is it that we let the government do it? If you want to go to your neighbor and you say, well, you have 3 cars and I don't have any. I want one of your cars. Most people say, well, that's illegal.
You can't just take someone's car.
No, but the government can. The government's taking stuff from us all the time. And most of the taking is from the people who work hard and they're middle class and they're poor and they suffer the consequence of inflation. If you and I can't steal from our neighbor and we can't take their car and we can't hurt.
If you and I can't steal from our neighbor, it's just basic property rights. It's basic freedom. If you've been one of the people that have been told that Ron Paul was a crazy lunatic who doesn't deserve to be around electoral politics, educate yourselves immediately. If we could have just listened and learned back then, he was way before his time. And yes, someone's mentioning Thomas Massie, who a senator just called a libertarian anarchist. If that's what a libertarian anarchist is, please let me be a libertarian anarchist. Massie came up through the Ron Paul Revolution. We loved him. We helped him. The revolution. Just amazing. And we move from this to more government overreach and police state tactics. Peter Navarro being sent to jail after the Supreme Court denies his appeal. We have a piece coming up on this at UncoverDC.com today by Wendy.
Today, you guys will certainly focus on that little story, but what I suggest to you as journalists is that there's two really bigger stories that you might want to report on and even do some research on, because these are big issues. This is not about me. One of the big stories is about what is really an unprecedented assault on the constitutional separation of powers and the...
Peter, they're not going to do any research on any of it. You're talking to the wrong group of people. Throughout the entire SCOTUS hearing on Monday, they were like, well, the media would never take instruction from the government about what to print. Where the hell have you people been? Seriously. Oh, goodness. Now, on to some good news, folks. That story, by the way, is up at uncoverdc.com. Uncoverdc.com. Here's a story by Wendy. Navarro sticks to principles, heads to Miami prison for 4 months. Former Trump advisor Dr. Peter Navarro held a press conference Tuesday before turning himself into federal prison in Miami. When asked whether he was afraid, he stated he was only afraid of one thing, the way the DOJ has weaponized and politicized the justice system. The inequities extend to the absurdity of juries in D.C., now so blatantly stacked against him and all the J6 defendants. It's almost impossible to get a fair trial in the district because it's so left-leaning. No defendant has been able to get a single judge to grant a change of venue request. And the piece continues. So just letting you know that's there. Now, major win in the Amos Miller case, guys. He's the Amish farmer from Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania government came in, shut him down, alleged all kinds of health problems with his raw milk that has not harmed a single person. They have not gotten a single complaint from anyone. I'm going to sneeze. Sorry. They don't have a single complaint from anybody who was harmed, but they don't want you to drink raw milk because it's unhealthy. Okay. We'll get into the debate about that. But they shut this man down, and Robert Barnes is representing him. And yesterday, they won a modification to the injunction that was filed, stopping him, seized all his products. They stopped him from being able to provide for his community and for his family. But yesterday, the judge... they had this injunction for the entire country, and people order from him from outside of Pennsylvania. They modified the injunction to only be for Pennsylvania. So only Pennsylvanians are disbarred or unallowed from drinking raw milk from Amos. But the rest of the country he can ship to. This is a local issue the Pennsylvania government has an issue with. I am sure, given the high-profile nature of this case, the feds will march right in and do their thing. But for now, if you want to buy from Amos, you can. And you're not in Pennsylvania. You can. So we've got that. Now, moving on a bit here to Fannie Willis. Fanny. Donald Trump and several of the co-defendants in this case, after the judge came back with this ridiculous order for her disqualification, saying that Nathan Wade gets kicked or Fannie Willis gets kicked. Of course Nathan Wade is going to kick. Just ridiculous. It was ridiculous what he found. We went over this at length. You guys all know, if you're a watcher, if you're viewers of the show, what happened here. I'm not going to relitigate the entire thing. But they want to appeal this. And in this case, the judge has to grant the appeal. And when he filed this, I said, it's almost like he wrote this to be appealed. So I would be pretty shocked if he didn't grant the appeal. But Judge Scott McAfee needs to grant permission within 10 days of his ruling, and then the state appeals court would need to agree to hear the case. If that happens, we'll have a little bit more delay. You gotta hope the appeals court in Georgia has a brain in their heads, because this is ridiculous for so many reasons. So they filed to appeal in this. Oh, here's something funny. This man was apparently pulled over on this tractor while he was riding home from somewhere. Let's listen.
I got a stick of butter. It's the good stuff. Here's the butter.
What are you doing with that?
I'm going to cook me a ribeye tonight with it, since I don't work and all, but I got...
You just keep your hands up for me.
Why am I under arrest? I'm driving a tractor down the road, and I got a stick of butter in my pocket.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Hell no, it don't, does it?
Listen, you need to have good butter if you're making a ribeye. That's number one. So let's just get that out of the way. Number two, that's a nice tractor. That's a nice tractor. Anyway, just to break it up a little bit. So next, Don Lemon and Elon Musk. So for those of you who don't know, Don Lemon wanted a deal with X, an exclusive deal with all kinds of perks, a Cybertruck, $5 million, all kinds of things. Eventually, he interviewed Elon for his show on X or whatever. Elon decided he didn't want to do business with Don Lemon and didn't do the deal. And now Don Lemon is all upset. Now Don Lemon screaming and screeching about free speech. Don Lemon, my show's running on X right now. Elon Musk has absolutely zero exclusive deal with me. Just because nobody wants to watch your show doesn't mean that you should be mad at Elon. But here he is interviewing Elon about Twitter 1.0 and why he thinks it should still be an echo chamber of the left and why the TikTok ban, in my opinion, outside of this interview, is actually a target for Elon, targeting Elon Musk rather than TikTok. But hey, you know, I'm just a lowly investigative journalist. Here we go.
There was an article recently written about you saying that you, Donald Trump, and X were the most important people or places or whatever icons when it comes to the MAGA movement. Do you agree with that? How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, there are nonsense articles written all the time, and I certainly wouldn't agree with that one. I put it in the nonsense category. So the objective fact of the matter, in my opinion, was that old Twitter was fundamentally a tool of the far left. And that was really, I think, a lot of it was due to being located in San Francisco, Berkeley. And so it wanted to essentially project the SF Berkeley political dogma worldwide.
You think it was far left?
Yes, I do.
I actually got off the platform because I would get so much hate tweets when it was called in, so much hate tweets and just guff from right-wing conspiracy theorists.
Right-wing conspiracy theorists. Everybody who doesn't agree with me is a conspiracy theorist. We've been right every time. Literally every time. Even if you start with the JFK stuff. Start with JFK. Aliens? Right. JFK? Correct. COVID? Right. Spygate? Correct. Where are we? Bigfoot? Arguable.
And called everything from, you know, fag to...
Sure. It's the internet, everything. You know. People will do... I mean, I've been called every name times 1,000.
Yeah. Do you agree that...
AKA grow a set, Don Lemon. I'm only saying Lemon because that's what Tucker says, and it's stuck, and I can't say lemon anymore.
It's right now, and that even it's moved into sort of MAGA land conspiracy theory?
I certainly don't think it's right. The old school Twitter suspended and suppressed accounts that you'd call on the right 10 times more than it did accounts on the left. And even when they did suspend an account on the left, it was because of arguments between two people on the left. The political donations of old Twitter were 99% Democrat. Mm. Does that sound left-wing or right-wing to you?
The Twitter donations?
Yes. You know when they look at donations from a company? If a company donates literally 99% of all donations onto Democrats, does that strike you as a left-leaning or a right-leaning company?
Oh, you mean the company donated. I understand what you're saying.
What I'm trying to tell you is that Twitter employees, people at Twitter, their political donations were 99%, literally 99%, to Democrats.
Oh, that's right-wing. That's right wing, Elon. Don't you know? Here's one more clip. I don't mind this answer.
My aspiration is to do whatever it takes to extend consciousness into the future. That's my goal, to make life multiplanetary as part of extending consciousness into the future.
Have the past few years, and considering everything that's gone on, has it been difficult for you and your family life?
It's been okay.
So then how do you see your legacy, Elon? How do you see how people see you in the...
First of all, I say that the... if I died knowing that I did what was right, or did my best to do what was right, and even if in the history books they said I did wrong, I would still feel okay about that. I care about the reality of goodness, not the perception of it. I think we should view civilization as tenuous, as fragile. If you do study history broadly, you'll see that there's a rise and fall to civilizations. They don't always go up. So we should do everything we possibly can to preserve and extend civilization as we know it.
Yeah.
And improve it. To become more enlightened over time. And we therefore want to address civilizational risks. We want to make sure that we don't have, for example, demographic collapse, which is the case in a lot of countries, just very low birth rate. We want to avoid World War III. Anything that is a civilizational risk. That's what I care about, civilizational risks. How do we extend consciousness into the future such that we are able to better understand the nature of reality?
Yeah. That's a good place to end the show today. Hope you guys enjoyed it. We'll be back with Frank on Friday for hopefully some fun, lots of fun. Again, check the show links. I'm putting my Substack there, all personal stuff, not journalism related, if you're interested. If you want to support the work we do at Uncover DC so we can keep doing this, it's greatly appreciated. You can head over to uncoverdc.com/support. Every time one of you goes there, it is so infinitely helpful to all of us, the small team at Uncover DC. So thank you guys. We will be back here on Friday morning. Have a great day.